This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
These coal companies like to frame their arguments in terms of jobs, but they don't care about jobs. I mean, they invented mountaintop removal mining. The whole point of mountaintop removal mining is to eliminate jobs.
Do you cringe when you hear the term clean coal? My guest today on Sea Change Radio feels that this term is not only an oxymoron, it's offensive to the many communities all over the world who are forced to live with the devastating environmental and health impacts of this multi-billion dollar industry. Politicians, by contrast, seem to like the term clean coal quite a bit. As someone who's in favor of renewable energy, when I watch progressive and conservative candidates arguing about who's a better ally to the coal industry, I often think, what would it sound like if someone took on coal in one of these debates? Well, today, Matt Wasson, an ecologist and the director of programs for Appalachian Voices, answers my question. Listen now as he confronts conventional wisdom, refutes the politicians, and tells it like it is. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Matt Wasson. He's the director of programs for Appalachian Voices. Matt, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks a bunch, Alex. I'm glad to be here.
First, tell us what Appalachian Voices is all about.
Appalachian Voices is a nonprofit environmental group. Our main office is in Boone, North Carolina, and we're working to address the greatest threats to the central and southern Appalachian region. Those threats are particularly dominated by coal, both the burning, the mining, the disposal of waste from coal.
Well, all the debates that we've been watching, I thought it might be useful if we have a little mock debate here, and I can play the forces of pro-coal, and you can be anti-coal. One of the things that made me think of having this kind of debate is that presidential candidates' positions on coal is a very ephemeral, fleeting thing. That there's Mitt Romney says, I like coal, or Barack Obama also has support for the coal industry. You know, we're working for coal industry jobs. In addition, he mentioned clean coal in his convention speech. So,
yep.
So clean coal, Matt, is the future of America's electricity grid. And without developing this abundant energy source, America will lose its footing as a world leader.
So, yeah, that is certainly not a surprising thing to hear from the coal industry. I'll tell you, Alex, coal is this whole concept of clean coal, and you actually spoke some of the other phrases that you'll hear about from the coal industry. They don't just push clean; they push the concept of abundance, of affordable, sometimes essential. And it turns out actually all of those adjectives are wrong when you're talking about coal. There certainly is a lot of coal in the ground, but in terms of what is economically mineable and usable, it's actually not that much. Right now, a few years ago, coal used to produce about half of America's electricity. Today, that amount is about a third, and that's because it's just being flat out outcompeted in the marketplace. That could change, however. Natural gas prices, for instance, could go back up, and so coal could look more competitive again. But in terms of right now, natural gas is the main competitor to coal. But if you look at the trajectory of where the costs of producing energy are going, the costs of renewables, particularly wind, but increasingly solar as well, are coming down at a pretty rapid rate. In most places, they still can't necessarily compete against the price of producing electricity from coal on a head-to-head basis. But you look 5 to 10 years out, and they really can. At the same time, the price of producing electricity from coal is going up, particularly in the East, where, you know, we've been mining coal in Appalachia for more than 100 years, and a lot of the easiest to get coal seams have been mined out. And so looking at coal as this abundant resource for the future is really simply not accurate.
So why do you love mountains so much? You have a website called ilovemountains.org. Mountains are great too. Who doesn't love mountains? But isn't it more important to have good American jobs? And if once that coal is taken out, can't they just reuse that land and turn it into golf courses or something?
Well, it's, you know, fortunately, we're in a situation where it isn't a choice between mountains and jobs or mountains and a reliable source of energy or electricity supply. There's plenty of other ways to generate coal or to produce coal. And in Appalachia, most of the mining still takes place underground, and that doesn't have nearly the impacts that surface mining coal, like mountaintop removal coal mining, has on the environment and on communities who live nearby. And of course, there's plenty of other ways to make electricity that are a lot cleaner and increasingly less expensive as well. So it's definitely not an either or choice. But why do we love mountains so much? You know, this is a great time of year to ask that.
You mountain huggers, you.
Yeah, that term is taken actually. Somebody that I think has the website. it's a great time of year to ask the question because people are absolutely flocking. I mean, I look outside my window right now and our town is just booming right now with people who have come up to the mountains to look at the fall foliage. And it's just gorgeous, just the resplendent colors that you see as you're driving across the Blue Ridge Parkway and all of that. And that's not just an important thing because I love and millions of Americans love to look at the beautiful foliage. That's actually, you know, billions of dollars of tourist money are flowing into the region right now. And one of the, you know, really tragic things just north of where I live, up in West Virginia, in southwestern Virginia, and in Kentucky, where mountaintop removal coal mining is happening, is all of that beauty is just absolutely being destroyed. More than 500 mountains have been obliterated by mountaintop removal mining to date, and that it's still happening as we speak. And terrible environmental problem, because these are some of the oldest and most biologically diverse mountains on the continent, but it also is having really harmful impacts on people who live nearby, 50% higher likelihood of dying of cancer, 40% higher likelihood of being born with birth defects if you live near these mountaintop removal mines, are some of the facts that have come out recently.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Matt Wasson. He's a PhD in ecology and the director of programs for Appalachian Voices. We're having a little mock debate here. Matt, let me read to you a quote from my good friend Mike Duncan. He's the president and CEO for the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. He says, "Voters will have a choice this November to elect candidates who stand up for coal and low-cost electricity. We have an EPA that wants to shutter more than 200 coal-fired power units across 25 states, destroying jobs and making electricity more expensive for businesses and families." So you're talking about destroying mountains, but Mike over here is talking about destroying jobs. Who are the American people supposed to believe?
Believing somebody like Mike Duncan, who is the mouthpiece of a multi-tens of billions of dollars ad campaign by dirty energy companies to essentially greenwash their product is generally not a good idea. You certainly want to take that with anything Mike Duncan's going to say with a grain of salt.
But clean coal electricity sounds terrific. I want some of this.
Well, thanks for bringing it up. So clean coal, I hate to put those two words together because it's, you know, what that is, it's a focus group phrase. It doesn't have any relationship with how we actually mine or process or consume or dispose of coal or its waste byproducts. But even if it weren't so misleading, it's a really offensive term, I think, to people who live in areas impacted by mining of coal, like in Appalachia, because you know, it speaks only to the what comes out of the smokestacks, which is really only one stage of the of what you might call the life cycle of coal. And a really good friend of mine, Judy Bonds from West Virginia, who died just last year. She was one of the most powerful voices of people in the region who were fighting against mountaintop removal coal mining. And she used to say, you know, I don't care if they have cotton candy and rose petals coming out of smokestacks, coal isn't clean. And what she was talking about was coal that was coming from mountaintop removal mines right near her home. And it's not just the mining either. In order to supposedly make coal clean or cleaner before it's shipped to power plants, they wash it and process it at these processing plants, and those and the waste from that ends up in the groundwater of people who live in mining communities. And we've seen thousands of cases of people's water being polluted. And you know, people who live in that region, we just looked at the numbers earlier this year. They have a life expectancy in these coal counties that's comparable to developing countries like Iran, Syria, El Salvador, and Vietnam. And so there's nothing clean about that.
But what about these jobs? Global Carbon Capture and Storage Institute had a panel, and I know that they, I don't have the number in front of me, but thousands of jobs are going to be created in cleaning up some of these supposedly dirty power plants and making, let's not call it clean coal, let's call it cleaner coal. If it's cleaner, won't that mean more jobs?
It doesn't matter, really, because the problem with that concept, you just brought up carbon capture and storage, and that technology on any scale that's meaningful to make a dent in climate change just really doesn't exist, and there's no sign that it could really be economically competitive with other cleaner sources of energy, even if it were developed. If you look at the rate at which the cost of wind power, solar, renewables, as well as natural gas, which has its own problems, but it's certainly a lot cheaper than coal, even conventional coal right now, much less this, you know, spending huge amounts more money trying to capture it. So really, that technology doesn't exist. There are no jobs there. It's just words that you hear. There's not really any reality to back it up. On the other hand, study after study has shown that clean energy creates more jobs per unit of energy that it produces. And so the problem with a lot of those studies is, sure, if you know, they look at the job situation in a vacuum. It's like, okay, so if we don't produce electricity from coal, we're just going to freeze in the dark and nobody's going to have a job. And that's just not true. What they don't do is look at, okay, well, if we don't produce it from coal but produce it from something else, what would the jobs impact be? And almost any study you're ever going to see is going to show that producing electricity in other ways is going to create a lot more jobs than if we produced it with coal. So, if you believe that America, the country that, you know, put a man on the moon in less than a decade, is going to freeze in the dark if we stop burning dirty black rocks, then maybe you could believe that rhetoric. But if you have any faith in America and American ingenuity at all, then all of those stats you just said are meaningless.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Matt Wasson. He's the director of programs for Appalachian Voices and an advocate against mountaintop removal mining. We're having a little mock debate here. I'm on the pro coal side of things, which I'm sure our listeners will get a kick out of. So green energy, this whole boondoggle into the clean energy economy, it's just a big waste of time and taxpayer money. Solyndra went bust, so we should never be investing in clean technology when we have cheap forms of energy right under our noses like coal. We have over 100 years of coal, and that's really the future. This is where you say, Jane, you ignorant slut.
Yeah, the dirty secret about those estimates of 100 or 200 years worth of coal is that they're just not true. They've been thoroughly debunked by everything from National Academy of Sciences to any number of other studies. They're based on estimates that, you know, from geologists back in the 70s or that and haven't really been updated in any meaningful way. And so it's not that there's not plenty of coal, but it's increasingly expensive and destructive to mine. And you know, that said, you know, presumably we could dig up every chunk of coal that's out there and power our country on coal for the next 100 years. That would involve essentially turning a quarter or a fifth of our country into a national sacrifice zone and probably bankrupting our economy, because the, you know, when we look even a decade into the future, the relative cost of producing electricity from wind, from solar, from renewables versus coal looks very different than it even does now. And so the purpose of these federal programs is to really jumpstart the sorts of technologies that will, you know, more rapidly get us to that place. But you know, in everything I just said, I'm talking about costs associated or prices that include dollar signs. And I think it's when you start talking about the real costs of coal that it's really hard to measure in any sort of economic sense. That's where you get at the reason why we have to make this transition and we need to make it soon. I mean, the fact is that catastrophic climate change is very nearly a reality. We are seeing climate change. Americans are finally starting to wake up to the fact that our climate is very rapidly changing around us, and it is going to have devastating economic, human health, environmental impacts, and that's already starting to occur. And you know, Americans are also waking up to the fact that we're blowing up our oldest and most diverse mountains on the continent in order to get coal. Those are all things that are hard to put dollar signs on, and yet they are the real reason why we have to make this pivot. And government has recognized that it has a role in, you know, it used to subsidize the heck out of the coal industry, and still there's a lot of even on budget subsidies to the coal industry. So it's not like the subsidies go just one way, but there's a real societal need to make a pivot and to cleaner sources of energy.
Okay, I'm throwing up the white flag. I can't continue the ruse anymore. So I'm taking my gloves off here. I'll give the first debate to you, sir. We'll have to see how it affects the polls. But one of the things that got me thinking about doing this was I've seen both campaigns, the Obama side and the Romney side, kind of needling each other on them being anti-coal. I've heard talk about this all-out war on coal. It's almost like this war on Christmas, but they're both living in this alternative reality where, here, let me read you an Obama press release saying, Mitt Romney once again is trying to hide his positions from Virginian, this time by trying to reinvent his stance on coal. The truth is, while he now claims he supports coal, Mitt Romney has been a longtime critic of coal-fired power plants. And then a Romney spokesman says, President Obama is mounting an all-out war on coal that's killing jobs in Virginia. No amount of disingenuous advertising can change that fact. So they're fighting over who loves coal more. Somebody who gets frustrated hearing this rhetoric, how can they tap into some of the groups that you're associated with, like Appalachian Voices and ILoveMountains.org. How can they tap into your organizations and others to try to turn that frustration into positive advocacy?
Well, and the first thing is, you know, I tell people this, I have my own resistance. I get too many emails. So many people get too many emails and they're really reluctant to, you know, sign up on a list. But, you know, what I tell people is, look, if you care about this, if you're the only way that you can do something about this is to stay engaged, to stay informed as to what's, you know, what's happening in Congress or what rules are being made by the EPA right now. And the only way to do that is to, you know, for people who are concerned about mountaintop removal coal mining, who want to see this travesty end, we have a little sign-up thing on ILoveMountains.org. And if people sign up, then every 2-3 weeks, they're going to get an email saying, you know, what's happening in Congress, what's happening at the White House, what, you know, and help them communicate their what they care about, you know, pretty efficiently so that they don't have to give up their lives or their fun time to you know, go to war on this, but that they can be part of a larger movement. And if we all kind of put our shoulder to the wheel, then we can have as much power as the coal industry. But it just takes people, you know, the first thing you got to do, there's a lot of things I could say that people could do, but the first thing you got to do is, you know, on mountaintop removal, go to ILoveMountains.org, sign up on the list. It's okay, we're not going to sell your name. You just have to be engaged at that level. That's step one.
Somebody who doesn't live in the shadows of a mountain, why is mountaintop removal mining important for them?
Well, one of the big things that I think a lot of people don't understand is that they are directly connected to it because they are essentially paying for it on their electricity bills. And you know, we actually created a tool on ILoveMountains.org that a lot of people have used that shows you directly. You can actually go right there on the front page, type in your zip code and see the power plants that are producing the electricity that's powering your home and the specific mountaintop removal mines that are supplying that power plant with coal. And you know, that I think when somebody does that, it really conveys that this isn't just something that's happening to someone else. This is something that you are deeply connected with every time you turn on your lights. And obviously it's also something that you can do something about.
Born down in a dead man's town, the first kick I took was when I hit the ground. Head up like a dog, that's been beat too much, till you spend half your life just to cover it up. I was born in the USA. I was born.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Matt Wasson. He's a PhD in ecology and the director of programs for Appalachian Voices. If mountaintop removal mining is becoming more and more popular in West Virginia, is this also the case in Wyoming, Matt, or is there something different at play with the removal of coal in the Big Sky region of the country?
Well, so it's certainly the mining out west has its own impacts that are it's not mountaintop removal. It's other types of mining. It has other impacts, and I'm not going to, you know, try to say one is, you know, that what's happening out there is okay. It's certainly not mountaintop removal and what's happening in Appalachia. One of the big differences is happening, you know, right above people's homes, right where people live. And I think that's one of the reasons why it has such a dramatic human impact compared to some other types of mining. But you know, from the industry side of things, it's all the same. I mean, they're chasing the biggest profit margin, right? And some of the companies, you know, it's a lot cheaper to mine coal in Wyoming and Montana than it is to mine coal in Appalachia. Part of that has to do with the fact that there's just really big coal seams out there. Part of it has to do with the fact that we've been mining coal for 100 years in Appalachia, and a lot of the highest quality and easiest to access coal seams have already been mined out. So both of those things are at play, but you know, they're just chasing profits, and the same is true with mountaintop removal. They don't save a lot of money on production costs doing mountaintop removal versus doing some types of underground mining techniques, but they reduce production costs a little bit, and that helps them to compete against Wyoming or Illinois for market share from coal-fired power plants. And so that's, you know, and it helps them outcompete each other. So it's not that you have to do mountaintop removal in order to mine coal. It's that companies are doing it because it gives them a little bit of an edge on their competitors. That edge, the way that they get that edge is by dramatically cutting down on the labor costs, by just not having to hire nearly as many miners for every ton of coal they produce.
Well, who are we supposed to believe when it comes to regulation of the coal industry? I've read studies that say the electric utility industry claims that regulating the disposal of coal ash could eliminate up to 316,000 jobs, while there's, on the flip side, I've read that coal ash regulation would create 28,000 jobs. That's quite a head scratcher. And I guess my question is, A, is coal ash regulation an important first step, or do you think that's just putting a Band-Aid on a much deeper wound? Or is coal ash regulation a positive way to try to not only create jobs, but to clean up this industry?
Well, in terms of who to believe on these job studies, you know, my recommendation is just tune them out. None of them are really get to the point. There will be jobs if we produce electricity from coal. There will be jobs if we produce electricity from renewables. And you know, you can argue about you know, which one might create more jobs on the margins. But in reality, that's not the important thing. The important thing is that it is absolutely unacceptable to blow up our mountains and poison people in order to produce electricity a little more cheaply, and even that is arguable whether it's more cheaply, but very powerful vested interests like these coal companies like to frame their arguments in terms of jobs, but they don't care about jobs. I mean, they invented mountaintop removal mining. The whole point of mountaintop removal mining is to eliminate jobs. It's to, you know, instead of employing lots of miners to dig into a mountain and get coal out of it, it's about employing, you know, taking the miner out of the mining equation. It's about, you know, replacing miners with explosives and giant equipment and you know, so that they can cut down on labor costs. And so anytime you hear these industries talking about jobs, that's just talking points. That's not what they care about. There is no reason you should even listen to them or care about what they have to say about jobs. They're not, it's just politics that they're playing.
Matt Wasson, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Auntie Ballas, Van Morrison, and Bruce Springsteen. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com.
That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.